Hello, I'm Steve Faggy. This is number 0631, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0631. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, author Larry Strauss, who is also the son of the late comedic TV star Charlotte Ray, he's on to talk about his new novel, his fifth, called Light Man, which pays homage to the quasi-dystopian New York City of his childhood.
I'm sure there are people who were living there who didn't feel it, although everybody felt it a little bit. I've often thought of, like, it's the same New York that Woody Allen paid tribute to in Manhattan. But that's not the New York I knew. The New York I knew was dangerous and strange and full of people who were on the edge and screaming at their ghosts. And, you know, I remember going to the subway as a 12-year-old and going to school and just walking down the stairs and almost tripping over junkies who were not much older than me.
Alex Sanfilippo is an entrepreneur and the founder of Podmatch. Is entrepreneurship the result of nurture or nature?
Growing up, I always kind of thought that I was a bit of an outlier, but the older I've gotten, I've realized more of my brothers have also become entrepreneurs. But my dad was an entrepreneur, which I never really viewed him as one because he was already so successful by the time I had a memory and could realize what he was doing. He had built a business that was fairly large at that point, but he did start from really nothing. My grandparents, they're fantastic people, but they came from real poverty on both sides of my family. But it's funny, all my aunts and uncles, they're all entrepreneurs as well, and now me and my brothers are as well. So I think I come from a bit of a family with it.
Stuart Nallman is in with another edition of Book Banter.
Hi, I'm Stuart Nallman, and this time at Book Banter, we join forces with Bill Clinton and James Patterson for another exciting political thriller with The President's Daughter. So get the SEAL team ready for action later on the Stuff File program.
And there's lots and lots of Stuff File news, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0631, was Steve Faggy, who is a copy editor at the Montreal Gazette, and he also has an excellent blog on media called Fagstein. Check it out. You can find links on the website for this week's page, which you just heard him say. Again, it all comes around full circle. Thank you very much, Steve, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? 37-year-old Keith Christopher, a guard at California's San Quentin Prison for the past 6 years, has been arrested on federal charges of supplying contraband to death row prisoners. Two associates were also charged in the conspiracy. None of the three entered pleas and were assigned public defenders. Christopher allegedly smuggled 25 cell phones into death row. Investigators say the inmates paid as much as $900 each for the phones, with $500 of those dollars going directly to Christopher. The three defendants face up to 20 years in prison and a $250,000 fine. You know, when you're arrested, they always give you that one free phone call. That must have been ironic for Christopher. I wonder who he called.
We're sorry. You have reached a number that has been disconnected or is no longer in service.
On another note, here's a sad state of affairs. Apparently, state prison guards at a maximum security facility, like San Quentin, make so little they qualify for public defenders. Sad, really, when you think about it. Meanwhile, a jury found 21-year-old Ben John of Lincoln, Lincolnshire, England, guilty of possessing repellent extremist documents and bomb-making instructions. At his sentencing, Judge Timothy Spencer said he had concluded John's crime was likely isolated and an act of teenage folly. Instead of sending him to prison, Judge Spencer made him promise to stop reading right-wing materials and mandated he read other works. "Have you read Dickens? Austen?" the judge asked. "Start with Pride and Prejudice and Dickens's A Tale of Two Cities and Shakespeare's Twelfth Night," before telling John's lawyer his client had escaped imprisonment by the skin of his teeth, he let John know the stakes of the reading assignment. "On January 4th, you will tell me what you have read. I will test you, and if I think you are lying to me, you will suffer. If you let me down, you know what will happen." Yeah, well, I think we all know what will happen. It will go from the best of times to the worst of times. Animal behavioral scientists at the University of Auckland in New Zealand, responding to the critical problem of livestock waste, have trained calves to urinate in a moo-loo, a special pen with an astroturf surface. Perhaps you didn't know that urine mixed with feces makes ammonia, which is an issue for the environment, or that cows produce an impressive amount of urine in a day, about 8 gallons. About the potty training endeavor, the study's senior author, Lindsay Matthews, said, "The cows are at least as good as children aged 2 to 4 years, at least as quick. Researchers lured the cows into the pen with a sweet treat and then rewarded them when they urinated. If, after training, they went outside the moo-loo, they got a squirt of cold water." You know, I did a little checking. As mentioned, cows can pee out about 8 gallons a day. The average horse, on the other hand, can only pee out about 2.4 gallons a day. So perhaps we should change the old axiom of peeing like a racehorse. Clearly, in this battle, the cows win. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, when Hurricane Ida bared down on Louisiana, residents and businesses got ready. The Domino's Pizza outlet in Covington got ready by throwing the prepared pizza dough into a dumpster. With the area's sustained power outage and heat in the 90s, or about 35 degrees Celsius, it just sat there for days, growing and growing.
From then on, there's no stopping the blob as it spreads from town to town.
It grew larger than the dumpster and cooked in the parking lot. Resident Nicole Amstutz couldn't help but notice it's growing into a giant, unstoppable blob.
"It's indestructible. It's indescribable. Nothing can stop it."
So far, the Domino's Pizza general manager has not responded to interview requests. Hasn't? Or can't? Has anybody heard from him at all lately?
"How can it be stopped? Mob hysteria sweeps one city. Before long, the nation, and then the world could fall before the blood-curdling threat of the blob."
Yeah. Anybody want a slice?
The blob. Terror has no shape.
Maybe not. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Larry Strauss is the author of Light Man. It's his fifth novel, and it's been described as a tragicomic meditation on manhood, which pays homage to the quasi-dystopian New York City of his childhood, and also his late mother, the comedic TV genius Charlotte Ray. Larry joins us on the line from California. Hi, Larry.
Hi. Good to talk to you.
Thanks for being on the program with us. That term, quasi-dystopian New York City of your childhood. New York was difficult for a period of time, but was it that quasi-dystopian?
Well, to me, as a child and a young teenager, it felt that way. I'm sure there are people who were living there who didn't feel it, although everybody felt it a little bit. You know, I've often thought of, like, you know, it's the same New York as Woody Allen, paid tribute to in Manhattan. You know, there's this beautiful architecture, but that's not the New York I knew. The New York I knew was dangerous and strange and full of people who were on the edge and screaming at their ghosts. And, you know, I remember going to the subway as a 12-year-old and, you know, going to school and just walking down the stairs and almost tripping over junkies who were not much older than me. And, they were like zombies. And so, I mean, I know there's a different city to other people, but certainly to me it felt that way. It felt like a city out of control.
Now, as I mentioned, your mother was Charlotte Ray, who, by the way, we had on this program back when she wrote the book, The Facts of My Life, which I believe you co-wrote as well, right?
I did. I helped her with it, yeah.
Yeah. And so somebody who hears you talk about the New York you grew up in would stop for a moment and say, well, wait a minute, weren't you the son of Charlotte Ray? How could life be that bad?
Yeah, well, It wasn't that it was bad. It was just strange. And I mean, for a kid, one thing I'm always amused by is my generation of parents. You know, we've all been very protective of our kids mostly, but I think it's partly a reaction to the fact that our parents just sort of, you know, I was riding the subway by myself when I was 11. And, you know, getting mugged and threatened and, you know, and beat up and, you know, as were a lot of my peers, you know, it was, and just seeing a lot of, you know, a lot of disturbing stuff. And, you know, we lived on the Upper West Side in a very nice building in a neighborhood that was, that was not always safe. It's funny because my mother was always safe because people recognized her from commercials. But my brother was developmentally disabled. He himself looked so strange and disturbed that nobody ever bothered him either. He used to go places by himself. But for me, until I got a little older and bigger, it was a pretty scary place.
Now, as I mentioned, we spoke to your mom about her book on this show when her book came out. And she touched on the story of your brother, and it was quite clear while she was talking about it that that whole thing was a painful experience for her. I'm curious to know what it was like for you as a sibling.
It was very different for me as a sibling. For me, I think it, you know, I really loved my brother, and I thought he was special, not even in a bad way. I mean, I knew that he had problems, but I also admired him in a way because he was so insulated from the outside world, you know, and I wanted that, you know, to me, the world was a painful place and he seemed immune to that. He had a kind of a magic about him to me until he got older. And then, you know, then it was different. Then it was very painful for me to see his decline. I could see my parents' devotion to him, and it was very inspiring to me, I think, even at a young age. I'm a high school teacher now, and people have asked me, like, you know, why do you never give up on a kid? And I've had some kids who, you know, seemed impossible, like they were never going to make it. They were never going to get out of the gang, or they were never going to turn it around. And I've never given up on any of them, even after they go to prison. Mm. You know, I write to them and it's easy for me because, you know, I saw what my parents did. They never gave up on them. Billy died.
So tell us about the book. Light Man, what exactly is it about? I mean, I gave a bit of a synopsis, but tell us what the story is from your point of view.
Without too many spoilers, it's got some fun twists, but it is about sort of the walking wounded navigating this dystopian New York City of the early 70s. The protagonist is a young man who's been orphaned by an abusive family. Actually, stepped on an explosive device in Vietnam, but somehow survived and bounced back to New York City, where he's sort of adopted by an anarchist who owns a camera and audio store. And he develops pictures in the basement. He's kind of like this mole, you know, downstairs in the darkness, looking at other people's lives. But he does manage to connect with a woman. She's the only person who's really ever loved him. But she is still struggling to trust anyone in the world. and to forgive herself for what happened to her younger sister. And she, who she connects with through the younger sister's dog, who's now lives in this tiny apartment with her and Al. But, you know, and Al doesn't really know how to help her. He's still trying to figure out how to be a man in this crazy world. But he sees this man, this other man in Riverside Park with his two children. And one of those children is very troubled. And you can see it, and he's having a conniption in the park. And Al watches this man and how he is patience and love and how he tries to fix his son. And he's, like, amazed by this, you know, partly because he never had anyone love him like that, but also because to him this just represents, you know, how to be a man in the world. And he eventually gets to know this guy. He finds him. He is the light man, this man, Mike. And he runs spotlights outside of the Broadway theaters. He's actually a very talented, you know, theatrical light man, trained himself. But the union won't let him in, so he's stuck outside, angry and bitter about it. And he's also got this son who's, you know, and Mike's not only can run lights, he's got a side business. He fixes people's TVs, you know, out of the apartment, his TVs and radios and toasters, but he can't fix his son, and it's killing him. And his wife is, you might guess where this inspiration came from. His wife is a distraught actress who's lost her mojo until she answers a cattle call audition for an insecticide commercial and channels her maternal angst into a performance that elevates her to hero status as the Roach Lady, whose personal angst and anger and guilt speak for every struggling New Yorker in all five boroughs and beyond.
Wow. Now, again, you are coloring outside of the lines of the New York that you grew up in, but in any way was writing this book somewhat cathartic for you?
Oh yes, very much so, very much so, and you know, and also, it's a story very much set in that time, in that moment, but it's also a moment that speaks to now, because it's about how damn hard it is to get along with people, and even the ones we love so much. It's also about two white men trying to stay relevant in a world that's slowly, finally beginning to embrace its own diversity. And, you know, and it's also about how irresistible conspiracy theories are as a way to explain, you know, what we can't understand and the misfortunes we know we couldn't possibly deserve. You know, and then of course, it's also about the power and peril of fame. There's a scene in it where Mike and Arlene, the actress and the light man, are trying to save their son on the street. He's like running in traffic, and well, I'm on the verge of a spoiler, but but they're on the verge of trying to save him from being hit by a car because he's so afraid of the garbage trucks, which it seems he's afraid he's going to get thrown into, almost as if he knows that he's broken. And they're trying to save him, and all of a sudden, you know, Arlene's disguise, her wig and sunglasses, fall off, and she's attacked by fans. She's attacked by people who, you know, whose desperate lives have suddenly seemed to have been redeemed by this commercial for this insecticide. You know, and they literally have to fight them off to save their son.
Wow.
So.
Well, we'll just leave it at that because we don't want to give away any spoilers, as you say. And we've just
thank you. Stop me before I do any more.
And we're just about out of time, but I've got to ask one more quick question, and it's a question that I actually asked your mom when she was on this show, and I asked her when she wrote the book, especially with all the the trials and tribulations of a situation with the family and the situation with your brother, the fact that she wrote the book with you, was it a cathartic experience for her to write the book with you, and did she get to know you better? I'll ask the same question to you from your point of view.
Sure. Oh, I absolutely got to know her. So, you know, I got to know so much more about her just from, yeah, I knew a lot. And one of the funny things about writing a book with someone in their 80s is she kept repeating the same stories, but fortunately I knew so much else about her life that I kind of wrote a draft from my own memory. And then she started remembering all the things she told me, and, you know, some of them she'd correct me, some of them we'd argue about, but, you know, there were some things that I never knew. Mm. And that, you know, that were very painful for her. And, you know, and just, you know, knowing them, you know, knowing more about her. And then the other thing was just, I really appreciated after that, just what a professional she was and how hard she worked at her craft. You know, what she did was she took the draft. She took the my final draft of the book, and she sat there with me and she started reading through it and out loud. And I was sitting there with a pencil going, wait a minute, wait, are you changing things? What's going on? You know, and what she was doing was she was performing it. Wow. Because that was, as an actress, she couldn't relate to a manuscript as a writer because she wasn't a writer, but she was an actress. And so the only thing she could do was perform this thing, was do the work of an actress as if this was a monologue. And, you know, it was quite remarkable to watch it. And she'd go, that isn't quite right, because she couldn't feel it in her character. Of course, her character was her, but, you know, but of course every character is, you know, in some sense at the core is the actor, as is every character at the core is the writer. And, you know, I was reminded of that also after she passed away, and I was going through her things, and I found this piles and piles of scripts she kept. She kept everything. And I opened them up, plays, you know, every episodes, three lines in a sitcom, whatever it was. And they were just covered in notes, in things that she'd scribble, you know, and that was her work. Like she would go over that script and every little nuance of that character. You know, and that's inspired me as a writer too, because of course writers try to do that kind of work too, but she was just tireless. And that was what I got, you know, that was probably the most, you know, most profound thing that I got from, you know, and I think she wanted everyone to know that about. She was an actress. She believed in her art. And yeah, I mean, she was a beautiful person too. And, you know, a loving mother, devoted mother, but, you know, also she wanted that respect, and certainly has it from me, and I think from a lot of other people.
Absolutely. Your current book is called Light Man. It's now available. I thank you very much, Larry, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
Larry Strauss, author of Light Man. The book is coming out in just a few weeks. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. You can hear this show on many a fine radio station, including CKHR-FM, Hay River, in the Northwest Territories.
The Stuff File program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio that's now gluten-free.
And still to come on the program, we will talk to the founder of Podmatch.com. Plus, Stuart Nauman is along with another edition of Book Banter. We also have an Idiot of the Day coming your way and much more in Stuff File News here on the Stuff File program, which is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, On September 15th, a 17-year-old driver in Youngstown, Ohio, was pulled over by police after he ran a stop sign and drove at high speeds. When police spoke to the nervous young man, they smelled what they thought was marijuana, and in the car they found a device that is used to load ammunition into a semi-automatic firearm. They also noticed that his belt was unbuckled. The teenager explained to police that the device belonged to his sister, and regarding his belt, he said, "I ain't gonna lie, I was trying to take a dump." Okay, he didn't use the word dump, but you get the idea. Anyway, police also searched the area where he had been driving and found a 9mm handgun in a yard. Finally, the suspect admitted that the gun was his, and presumably, he had been trying to hide it in his waistband. He was charged with improper handling of a firearm in a motor vehicle. Well, it could have been worse. I mean, driving at high speeds, being chased by police, and having a gun down your pants? So many things could have gone wrong. You don't want to go off half-cocked, do you? Okay, we go from someone who claimed to defecate to someone who actually did. Shirley Wright Johnson was shopping for pizza rolls in an Oklahoma City Crest food store on September the 12th when she literally put her hand in it. As she reached into the frozen case to pick up the rolls, Wright Johnson said, "I grabbed the bag, I felt something smushy on the bag, so I turned it over and there it was. It was human feces. I was so disgusted, I was almost in tears," she said.
"That's disgusting!"
More Oklahoma police investigated, checking store video cameras where they saw a man in the cooler section where he proceeded to defecate inside one of the coolers before leaving the business. The suspect was apprehended and booked into the Cleveland County Detention Center on unrelated charges. Wow, what were those unrelated charges? By the way, aren't some people a little too old to be toilet trained? Maybe they should train him like the cows in New Zealand. Okay, here's one way to swear off fast food burgers. Estefanie Benitez of Santa Cruz de la Sierra, Bolivia, visited her favorite burger chain, Hot Burger, on September the 12th and got an extra topping with her sandwich, a rotting human finger. Benitez bit into the burger and felt something unfamiliar, then pulled the finger out of her mouth.
Dust for Prince!
While the restaurant carried on serving customers like nothing had happened, Benitez said a company representative told her the burgers arrive at the store pre-prepared. But later, the director of the National Police's Special Crime Fighting Force confirmed that a company employee had lost part of his finger at work. Well, it's not lost anymore. When you consider the fast food chain's initial response, I guess you can say that they gave Benitez the finger twice. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, in the small Ontario town of Durham, an unidentified driver sealed his fate on September 15th when, at about 1:45 a.m., he began driving a red Cadillac in slow circles around the parking lot of the Durham Regional Police Station. An officer inside the building noticed the car and went outside, asking the driver to stop. Said police, the driver did not comply and continued to drive slowly in and around the parked police vehicles while flashing his headlights. Finally, two cruisers boxed him in and stopped the car. The driver was arrested for driving while impaired. You know, I would have been more impressed with this driver if he had channeled Luther from the film The Warriors.
Warriors, come out to play! Warriors, come out to play!
Great use of Coke bottles, by the way. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here in this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Alex Sanfilippo is an entrepreneur and also the founder of Podmatch, which is a service that matches program guests with hosts. Full disclosure, this is also one of the services that I use for the Stuff File program. Alex is someone who seems to find niches that need to be served and serves them. He joins us via Skype from Jacksonville, Florida. Hi, Alex.
Hey, Peter, glad to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being on the program with us. In reading your bio, you started your first business when you were only 10 years old. So what I want to know is entrepreneurship, is it something that is nature or nurture as far as you're concerned?
It's probably a little bit of both. There's some people that I find that have no desire to be an entrepreneur. And from that side is where I differ. Like from a young age, like you mentioned, I really enjoyed entrepreneurship even at a young age. But I do think it requires to be nurtured as well, because you don't just come out of the box knowing what to do. Like, you've got to learn this stuff. And there is a success pattern that needs to be followed.
And what is that success pattern as far as you're concerned?
So it depends on the type of individual you are. Like, really has a lot to do with, I believe, your personality. Now, sure, there are some things like timing and planning and things like that that go into all businesses, but really it goes with your natural tendencies. So I find a lot of people that end up being entrepreneurs, many of them turn into entrepreneurs because they had a passion, they had a drive, they wanted to solve a problem for somebody, but they lack a lot of self-discipline, myself included at one point with this. Like, waking up in the morning with no boss telling you to wake up was a tough thing. And that's a side that I believe needs to be nurtured. You need to learn those simple disciplines. You need to have mentors in your life to help teach you simple things like, hey, make sure that you're following a good routine, or make sure that you're following good business practice. You can't just solve the problem for somebody and expect everything to run successfully. You've got to follow the pattern of what makes a good business. And that's the part, once again, that I believe is nurtured.
Now, I understand you started podcasting in about 2016. You started PodMatch after that. So was this a situation where it was necessity is the mother of invention? You felt you needed something that wasn't available to you and you just decided to create it?
That was definitely part of it. So for me, I actually really fell in love with podcasting in general. And when I first got started, I knew nothing about it. I mean, Peter, you've got an extraordinary background. I've been listening to your show. So is my wife. You do a great job with this. And I didn't have any sort of background. So like when I started, we all start from nothing, right? But thankfully, now in this more modern world, when I got started, there was a lot of people who were doing podcasts that were just willing to help out. They weren't competitive. They just wanted to add some value and help out. And because I really just fell in love with the people who were podcasters. So I started speaking at the podcasting conferences as I grew my own show and just adding some value there. But all along the way, I realized I had the problem consistently of trying to find that next guest. Like, it was never an easy process, because half the people I reached out to that I thought would make a good guest weren't interested in being on podcasts, or they were just too busy, or I just didn't get responses. And that's really where it came from. So it was a little bit of necessity, but also necessity that I saw that other people had, because I consistently heard from other podcasters, they were struggling with the same thing. And that's when I realized, hey, it's not just me, it's also the group of people I care about. I need to do something about this. And that's where it came from.
Well, I got to tell you, and again, full disclosure, with the years that I've been doing this, both 12 on this show and 20 before that on a radio show, there are a lot of services that come and go through the years that help to facilitate guests on whatever program you're working on. And I've used a lot of them. Some are good, some are bad. I've got to say right off the bat that the interface that involves a PodMatch got to be one of the best, easiest to use, user-friendly. It makes it a simple situation, not only because it's not just important to get a guest. There's the pre-interview, there's the interview, there's the post promotion of said interview, and your site actually facilitates that.
Yeah, thank you so much for saying that. That like literally just made my day. But that was one of the ideas behind it, because when I finally find a guest, I had to chase them down for a bio. I had to look for their media approved media files. So I wanted to actually get pictures of them, finding their websites and social links. It all turned into a lot. So the idea was, can we put all this thing in one place? So one, the guest doesn't get annoyed with consistent emails coming through of, oh, I forgot to ask for this. Oh, I forgot about that. And on the host side, can we just make it easy for them? So it's all right there. So again, it cuts down on the amount of communication that's purely administrative.
As an entrepreneur, as a lifelong entrepreneur, is the business that you're in, whatever that business is it something that has been a passion of yours for a long time? Or do you, as I said in the introduction, just simply find a niche to fill? In other words, is there a dream? Is there a goal? Is there something that little Alex Sanfilippo wanted to do that maybe you haven't done yet?
You know, when I was about 10 years old, when I was selling used golf balls, that's what I was doing. I still have this desire to be a cowboy. I wanted to move to Texas and be a cowboy. Come to find out that wasn't a thing anymore. I kind of assumed we'd all be on horses and I want to be a sheriff, but apparently that wasn't a thing. After that, you know, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And for a long time, that actually really bothered me. Like throughout my 20s, even that was like a struggle point for me. But it wasn't until I realized that what I just needed to do was explore my hobbies, explore the things that I had a little bit of passion in, and see if there's anything that could develop there. So for me, I don't just jump around looking for problems to solve, although that is a good way to do businesses. And I think it's always important to think creatively that way. But instead, I add one thing to that equation, which is first, am I passionate about the area? So for me, I'm a passionate podcaster myself. I'm passionate about the podcasting community. Therefore, if there's any problems or small niches that need to be solved within this community, I'm going to go for it because it's in my area of passion. And I find that when you have that passion, it fuels long-term results as well.
Well, you mentioned your podcast, so let's get the plug out there. What is your podcast? What is the title of it? What is it about?
Yeah, sure. Thank you so much. It's called Creating a Brand. And simply put, it's for people that are wanting to create a brand for themselves. So early stage entrepreneurs. And the whole idea is I bring on subject matter experts and authors and spaces that are going to help those early entrepreneurs make their first or next step in their business, something that's right, something that's meaningful, and help them to drive it forward.
And where does one find your podcast?
So I'm pretty simple. Creating a Brand is a simple name, I like to think, and the website is just as simple. It's creatingabrand.com. Everything I do is on that that simple website for you.
Do you come from an entrepreneurial family, or are you an outlier in the family?
You know, it's funny you ask that. Growing up, I always kind of thought that I was a bit of an outlier, but the older I've gotten, I've realized more of my brothers have also become entrepreneurs. But my dad was an entrepreneur, which I never really, strangely enough, growing up, I never really viewed him as one because he was already so successful by the time I was had a memory and could realize what he was doing. He had built a business that was fairly large at that point, but he did start from really nothing. My grandparents, they're fantastic people, but they came from real poverty, like on both sides of my family. But it's funny, all my my aunts and uncles, they're all entrepreneurs as well, and now me and my brothers are as well. So I think I come from a bit of a family with it. At the same time, none of us have had any issue working in corporate. We've all done that at certain times and really enjoyed it.
So it is nature versus nurture in your case.
I guess it is. You're absolutely right.
That's fantastic. So again, I've already mentioned what PodMatch is, but for those who might be interested out there who are podcasters themselves or who want to be guests on podcasts, explain to us what PodMatch is also.
Yeah, sure. So simply put, it's like online dating, but for podcast guests and hosts. So think of like Tinder or one of those websites where it's basically going to match you with somebody that thinks it has the same interest as you. So if you're a podcast host, let's just use my show as an example. It's for early stage entrepreneurs. If you're an author that talks about format, like properly creating a business, and that's what you have a book on, and that's what you talk about, it's going to match us together. And from there, we can message back and forth and schedule the interview if it's something we want to do, or we can hit pass and just move on to the next person and continue going through like that. And the whole concept here is to help not only podcast hosts, but also podcast guests, because it has both sides. You can register as either. Help them to get their voices out, to get their voices heard, because I believe that podcasting and radio, these are really some of the last ways that true independent voices are being heard in the world. I don't think social media or TV is necessarily doing that anymore, but this is really kind of that last stand, if you will, for independence to get that voice out there. So for me, it's all about elevating that, and PodMatch is our vehicle for making it happen.
It's a relatively young site. Are you surprised at how successful it's been in a short period of time?
Yeah, you know, I probably shouldn't say that, but yeah, I'm completely surprised. Like, I know it's been done well and it's there to serve people, but there was no way for me to foresee the amount of success it's had this far.
Well, congratulations on a great site. Again, the site is called PodMatch. And again, mention your podcast again?
Yeah, sure. Creating a Brand, and that's at creatingabrand.com.
Creatingabrand.com. Alex, thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. Pleasure to have you on.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate what you're doing here. And to the audience, thanks for listening.
Entrepreneur Alex Sanfilippo, the founder of PodMatch. He's also a podcaster himself. His show is called Creating a Brand. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the page for this show, which is show number 0631, and you'll find links to Alex's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, a show that is heard on many fine radio stations, including CFMH FM Local 107.3 FM in St. John, New Brunswick.
Got something for the mailbag? Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. Send your email to mailbag@thestufffile.com. And remember, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. That's mailbag@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Often I mention my book, Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. I also often mention that I'd like you to become a patron of the Stuff File program via Patreon.com. Well, this is my opportunity to combine both of those pleas to you. You've heard me say on many occasions about the myriad of celebrities I've had the chance to talk to that are contained in my book, which is published by Bear Manor Media. You've also heard me mention that some of the celebrities in my book, and many others, can be heard on our page at Patreon.com. Well, if you've been on the fence about joining Patreon, let me try to pull you over to our side. By becoming a patron, you help to make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. And if you do become a regular patron, as a Patreon reward, I'll share with you an electronic version of my book for your e-reader. So join Patreon and claim your copy of Great Conversations, my interviews with two men on the moon and a galaxy of stars. Sign up today at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nauman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And coming to you not from the Oval Office, but somewhere that's probably a little more square, Stuart Nauman. Hello, Stu.
How you doing, Peter?
Just tickety-boo.
I was going to say from the inside of a Black Hawk helicopter, but I can't do the impersonation of the blades rotating. It would just not be good.
Okay. So what are we talking about this week, sir?
Well, we're going to talk about a collaborative effort of, you mentioned the Oval Office, but I'm calling for my rather square one. It's a collaborative effort of former U.S. President Bill Clinton and mega bestselling author James Patterson. So I just want to preface this by saying about 3 years ago, an unlikely literary pairing took place as former U.S. President Bill Clinton teamed up with mega bestselling author and human writing machine James Patterson to write a political thriller called The President is Missing. Now, the book, which could have easily been dismissed as a publicity stunt, became an immediate bestseller and topped many fiction lists. And to prove that The President is Missing was no fluke, President Clinton and James Patterson decided to do another collaboration in the political thriller genre. And the end result is The President's Daughter. And after reading it, I can certainly say that the term fluke has no place in what I have to say about this book. Now, in fact, I found The President's Daughter to be quite the incessant race against time page-turner with plenty of intrigue, action, and a nice little twist at the end. Now, the story focuses on Matthew Keating, a newly retired president of the U.S., or POTUS, as you would say, thanks to the stab-in-the-back maneuvers during the primaries by his vice president, Pamela Barnes, who is the newly elected POTUS, and has just settled into the life of a past president at his home in the mountains of New Hampshire. While his wife, Samantha, resumes her pre-White House career as an archaeology professor, and daughter, Melanie, goes to college. So as the Keating family is becoming familiar with their more quiet, normal family life, something happens that practically throws a wrench into their idyllic post-presidential plans in the wilds of northern New England. You see, during a visit to the Keating home from college, Melanie is suddenly and violently kidnapped and taken hostage by a small group of terrorists led by Yassim al-Rashid, who is bent on dealing out vengeance against Matthew Keating, who during his administration ordered a bombing attack on al-Rashid's home in Libya, which killed his wife and three daughters. Now, Matthew Keating sees that he can't get very much help with the Barnes administration, decides to use his skills and know-how that he obtained while serving as a member of the Navy SEALs as he goes behind the backs of President Barnes and his Secret Service protective detail to create his own SEALs-type commando unit to follow Asim al-Rashid's tracks and rescue his daughter, Melanie, before al-Rashid exacts his planned murderous revenge. Now, The President's Daughter has the required elements for an enjoyable political thriller. There's intrigue, backroom moves, clash of egos, vengeance, violence, a lot of secret intelligence, technically sophisticated tools and weaponry, action, and the element of real time in order to accomplish the mission in question. Now, with the current success of The President's Daughter on the bestseller list, it is doing very well. We hopefully can look forward to more literary collaborative efforts between Clinton and Patterson. And in a way, it can open the door to the other surviving past presidents that when it comes to writing post-White House books, they don't have to restrict themselves only to memoirs or political issue-oriented tomes.
Or in the case of the last president, a coloring book.
Yeah. Get your own crayons for that one.
Yeah. It's interesting because I believe the saying goes, what is good for the goose is good for the gander. Now that he's got two successful books out with the president of the United States, Hillary's getting into the game?
Yes, she is. In fact, she teamed up with Quebec-born best-selling mystery writer Louise Penny, and she's a good friend of Bill and Hillary. And they came together and they put together their very first a political thriller in their own right. It's called State of Terror, and that's going to be released in October.
And speaking of the president's daughter, I understand that Hillary and their daughter has put a book together themselves.
Yeah, they did one on extraordinary historical women, American women. So they did have a collaborative effort. It seems that the family that, ruled America together writes together, too.
Meanwhile, the last guy probably has a coloring book.
Yeah.
Again.
A Whitman one.
Yeah. Again. So this week's book is?
It's called The President's Daughter by Bill Clinton and James Patterson. It's published by Little Brown and Knopf. Little Brown is Patterson's publisher. Knopf is Clinton's publisher. And it's $38.
And by the way, I understand there are also dueling books out by the Obamas.
Well, yeah, there's, Barack has his memoirs and so does Michelle. So there's that. And also Barack has another book out that he put together with Bruce Springsteen.
That's right. Yes. And they've got a podcast, too.
Yeah.
Everybody's got a podcast these days.
Yeah, everyone's got a. I'm part of a podcast. But I don't have my own one yet. Mm.
Anyway, so again, the book is the Bill Clinton book, Patterson, it's called?
It's called The President's Daughter. It's published by Little Brown and Knopf, and it's just a presidentially $38.
And what do you suggest in this genre from others?
Well, I do, it's sort of like a B-O-L-O, be on the lookout for the book that Hillary and Louise Penny put together, A State of Terror. So that one, let's see how the First Lady does with one of the premier women mystery writers. And I also suggest read the first book between that Clinton and Patterson put together, The President's Missing. It's pretty good. It did very well, too. So, by the way, when you read The President's Missing, you could tell who wrote, which passages were written by Patterson and which ones were written by Clinton. It's very obvious when you read the first book.
Wow. Okay. So, again, thank you very much, Stuart, for yet another captivating edition of Book Banter. May I suggest that if you ever go to the Oval Office, don't try and hide in the corners.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of difficult, don't you think?
Yeah. And how can people find you, by the way, unless you're trying to hide in a corner in the Oval Office?
Well, it won't be at the West Wing, that's for sure. It's going to be in the pages of the Montreal Times, every week in print or online at www.mtltimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stu.
Oh, you're welcome, Peter. I think I'll go with Bill and have a cheeseburger.
Stuart Nauman with another edition of Book Banter here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about a racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We do have a few more Stuff File news stories to share with you and, of course, an idiot of the day. So let's get right to it, shall we? Many people will cop to doing something incredibly stupid in their teen years, but I'm guessing that none of you can top this one. A UK teen had to undergo emergency surgery after he tried to measure his manhood, which resulted in him getting a USB cable lodged in his urethra.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
No, no, no. That's Aretha. Anyway, the phallic fiasco reportedly began after an unnamed 15-year-old boy was triggered by sexual curiosity and inserted a USB wire into his urethra as described in a wince-worthy study published in the medical journal Urology Case Reports. That's not a charging station, son. The sexperiment backfired when the cable became lodged in the curious teen's scrotum like an electronic catheter. Despite attempts to extract it himself, the USB cord became tangled so terribly that both ends were left dangling out of his wired willy. The plugged-up boy's family transported him to a hospital after he began urinating blood. After initial attempts to remove the wire failed, the teen was transferred to University College Hospital London to see if they could extricate the intrapenal measuring tape. Subsequent x-rays, and I've seen those x-rays, revealed that there was a veritable Gordian knot of USB wire inside the teenager, which required surgeons to make an incision in the region between his genitals and anus to yank it out. They pulled the spooled end through the hole first, cutting it free from the rest of the wire before removing the remaining bits, literally pulling the plug. Thankfully, the boy recovered without incident and was discharged from the hospital the following day. However, he did have to undergo a follow-up scan 2 weeks later and will require monitoring in the future. Experts have also blamed sounding, a strange proclivity defined as inserting foreign bodies into one's urethra. Last month, a Randy, Michigan man was left struggling to pee after he got 6 kidney beans lodged in his urethra during a bizarre attempt at sexual gratification. Unfortunately, doctors say, phallus-filling maneuvers are becoming more common, as everything is, thanks to social media and, in general, the easier ways that misinformation can be spread. Well, he now has a story to tell his grandkids, assuming he'll be able to have grandkids. A first edition of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein set a new world record for a printed work by a woman when it was auctioned for $1.17 million. The 3-volume copy of Frankenstein, which still bears its original boards from its 1818 printing, had been projected to sell for $200,000 to $300,000 by auction house Christie's, but the sale closed with a top bid many times that estimate. The sum was reported by Fine Books magazine to be a new world record for the highest price fetched by a printed work by a woman. Christie's said the edition was one of only 500 printed in Frankenstein's first run, and the copy sold was the first to be offered for auction since 1985. Wow. If anybody out there knows the new owner, we should all do them a favor. I mean, since they spent $1.17 million, don't spoil it for them by telling them how it ends. Anyway, boys and girls, it's that moment you've all been waiting for. It's time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This stuff I'll present, the Idiot of the Day.
A Tampa motorcyclist who was arrested following a high-speed police chase told cops that he was trying to show off for his female passenger with whom he was on a first date. 22-year-old Taylor Beverly ran through a red light while driving a white 2017 Suzuki. Beverly allegedly looked back and made eye contact with nearby Clearwater Police Department officers as he raced away. Police gave chase and sought to make a traffic stop, but when Beverly drove well over 100 miles per hour and began to weave in and out of traffic and run multiple red lights, they broke off the pursuit. Other units were on the lookout for Beverly, and he was eventually taken into custody after stopping his motorcycle at an intersection. Beverly confessed and stated that he was trying to show off for his date. His passenger, however, was not impressed. The woman told cops she was screaming at him to stop, but he refused. Beverly was charged with a felony for fleeing cops at a high speed with wanton disregard for the safety of others. I think it's safe to say he's not getting a second date. I mean, why? Oh, why? Would you think that it's a good idea to run from the cops at high speed on a motorcycle as a first impression for your date? One reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0631. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links and all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number. And once again, that's 0631. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook and Twitter as PA Holder. And don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on Apple or Google Podcasts, streaming on Spotify, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, CKUW-FM in Winnipeg, and CFMU in Hamilton. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. I'm your announcer, your name here. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Ben Patrick Johnson. What am I being paid for this? What? You're flipping kidding me. Okay, that's it. Turn off the microphone.